Can American sovereignty, as designed by the founders in the Constitution, in any way be undermined by emergency measures to a fight against alleged man-made catastrophic global warming? President Biden said just recently that climate change poses an existential threat to humanity. He said it's more dangerous to humankind than nuclear weapons. Really? In contrast with this, Steve Gorham, author of some books questioning the whole narrative about climate alarmism, notes, quote, "Except for a Chinese invasion of Taiwan, the biggest threat we have is foolish government actions to fight climate change," end quote. Steve Gorham is the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. He's the author of four books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development, with over 100,000 copies in print. His new book is called Green Breakdown. This is Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and we welcome back to the program Steve Gorham. Steve, welcome to the program. Thank you.
Hey, Jerry. Great to join you.
Sure. Okay, so let's start with the president, who said that climate change poses an existential threat. First of all, what does that even mean? Existential.
Yeah, it's a favorite phrase of climate alarmists today, especially. existential. I guess that means coming from outside, but I don't know. I probably should have to look up the definition.
Well, I think it just means that it threatens our very existence. I mean, it's just that simple.
Uh-huh.
But does climate change, man-made, supposedly catastrophic, supposedly climate change, threaten indeed our very existence, our very future, our very lives?
Oh, it really doesn't. We've had only 1 degree Celsius, about 2 degrees Fahrenheit warming in the last 140 years since thermometers started to be used in about 1880. That's a very, very small temperature rise over all that period. And then there's oceans of evidence that it was warmer naturally in the past. 1,000 years ago, when the Vikings settled southwest Greenland, it was warmer then. And then when the Romans and the Roman soldiers in those short skirts conquered the Mediterranean 2,000 years ago, they were actually growing grapes for wine in England, and they were growing olives in Germany at that time. And there are just many, many examples of how it has been warmer in the past naturally, long before we had power plants or sport utility vehicles. So despite the media and the alarm from many of our political leaders in the United Nations, there's really no evidence that we're having any kind of a major threat.
Well, why do they keep banging the drum? And they're scaring all these young people who have no perspective. They don't know much. I've seen video where somebody was spray painting bones of dinosaurs in a museum. There are attempts to destroy classic works of art. Somebody even tried to do that with the Mona Lisa recently. You have people blocking traffic as if their whole future, you know, depends on the nations changing things. But it's like they're scaring all these kids with information that's not real.
Yeah, they've been seized by this powerful ideology, climatism, the belief that humans are causing dangerous global warming. And the fear of man-made warming, fear can be powerful, and many people are using it to scare our youth. I mean, there's some books recently purchased saying, should we really have kids in the age of global warming? Very, very sad. There's a number of people that are saying, well, we're not going to have children anymore because they have no future. And also they're adding to man-made warming. They're here and they're emitting greenhouse gases, so you don't want to have any kids. Unfortunately, these folks are going to grow up and not have families. And 40, 50 years ago, when everybody realizes that this is wrong, that the climate is dominated by natural factors and not what we're doing as humans, it'll be very, very sad for those folks.
Well, how did this all, you know, just blow up? I mean, it's just unbelievable those kids don't have the perspective that you and I have. They don't have that sense of history. They're only taught the one side of things. And it's like the book of Proverbs says, you know, this sounds like it makes sense until the other one comes along in Proverbs 18, you know, and shows the other side. And there is another side on this. And then the main thing is that it's not man-made and it's not catastrophic. Other than that, you know.
Right. Well, those are some pretty big items. And, well, it started back in about the 1970s or so. A number of computer modelers, folks that were developing climate models to run on supercomputers, pointed out that the level of atmospheric carbon dioxide was rising. Well, emissions were rising as well. And they felt that we were going to cause dangerous global warming. And the world kind of jumped to a conclusion on this. In 1988, Dr. James Hansen and some others, the Senate held hearings on man-made global warming. Dr. James Hansen of NASA testified. He said he was 98% sure the world was warming and people were causing it. And just 3 years later, at the Rio de Janeiro Earth Summit, more than 40 nations and the European Union signed a treaty saying they would reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Many scientists at that time signed petitions saying that, well, we just don't know enough about this to claim that this is really a cause. And for the last 30 years or so, nations have been arguing about when and how much to reduce emissions. But if you look at the data, you see we're not having more frequent or stronger storms. We're not having more droughts or floods. The polar bears are doing fine. The oceans are rising 7 or 8 inches per century, the same that they've been doing for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so the evidence really isn't there that we're causing a dangerous problem. And oh, by the way, warm temperatures are better for people.
Boy, that makes so much sense. The subtitle of your book, Green Breakdown, is The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. I'd like you to comment on that. Do renewable energy sources like wind turbines and things like that, are they sufficient to replace, other traditional forms of fossil fuel, coal, natural gas, and so forth?
Well, they're not sufficient. And the world is heading for trying to get to a thing called net zero by 2050, at least the wealthy nations of the world. United States, Europe, Canada, New Zealand, Australia. But this is more than a reach-out goal. This is an impossibility, and it's all going to break down. Wind, solar, and biofuels are not sufficient to replace traditional coal, oil, and natural gas. And what we are going to get instead is we're going to get higher energy prices. We're already seeing that. We're going to get electricity blackouts. We're seeing that as well. People's freedom is going to be taken away because our governments are forcing us to try and adopt electric vehicles and get rid of gasoline cars, forcing us to get rid of natural gas and propane heating and stoves and try and go to electric. And then we're going to see these big energy shocks like Europe saw over the last 2 years, which have raised prices and caused a lower standard of living for people. What's going to happen is this is going to break down and people are going to demand a return to low-cost, reliable energy again. And so that's what Green Breakdown is about.
Okay. Where does nuclear energy, by the way, fit into all this?
Well, nuclear is about 10% of the world's electricity right now. It's been declining for a number of years as other sources have been providing more and more energy. Nuclear is very safe. It is non-polluting. It doesn't emit carbon dioxide if you're interested in that, which is really isn't a big deal in any case. But the cost of nuclear is very expensive. It costs 4 or 5 times as much as natural gas. And we really need some cost breakthroughs with nuclear to get it back in the game. Maybe the new small modular reactors or the molten salt reactors will allow us to do that. I'm hoping that'll be the case. But right now, nuclear is just a very expensive source for electricity.
Okay, how about some comments about coal? And it's my understanding that here in America, you know, the left is doing everything they can to just, you know, discourage coal by all means necessary or whatever, any means necessary. Meanwhile, in China, they're opening up coal plants a lot.
Well, they are. We have about 6,500 coal-fired power plants around the world. They are the biggest source of electricity for the world right now. They provide about 35% of the world's electricity. But we have a number of people who want to get rid of it. We actually have a shortage of electricity around the globe. We have 700 million people that don't have access to electricity, another 2 billion that have blackouts or brownouts every day or every other day. But we have the folks of the climate movement trying to get rid of all those power plants. Very, very foolish. And the developing world needs coal. It's very low cost to help build their economies and help increase their standard of living. So coal is still here to stay for a while. What we need to do with coal is reduce real pollution, which isn't carbon dioxide, but is things like carbon particulates, small particles, sulfur dioxides, nitrogen dioxides. And we've done that in many ways in the United States and some other nations. We put scrubbers on our power plants to get those real pollutants out. But in any case, it's going to be very, very tough to replace those, and wind and solar are not going to be able to do it.
You know, it's very interesting to me that carbon dioxide, when I grew up, and I'm 67 years old, when I grew up, carbon dioxide, as I understood it, was a good thing because, you know, the plants needed carbon dioxide and we need the oxygen, and we have this beautiful symbiotic relationship that God created.
Yep.
But, now carbon dioxide is a bad guy?
It is remarkable. It's one of the craziest things in the world. It's called a pollutant, but carbon dioxide, and it's called carbon pollution, which is absolutely wrong. We shouldn't be calling anything carbon pollution. It's carbon dioxide. Carbon and carbon dioxide are two completely different substances. Carbon gives you a picture of pencil lead or soot, where carbon dioxide is an odorless, invisible, harmless gas, doesn't cause smoke or smog. As a matter of fact, it's great for the plants. I often ask audiences when I present, what do cannabis growers know that the EPA doesn't know? And the answer is that carbon dioxide is green. Any marijuana grower worth his or her salt is pumping carbon dioxide into the greenhouse to make their crop grow bigger and faster. And we've had about more than a 10% increase in global foliage in the last 30 or 40 years, because there's higher levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So it is really a great thing. And there are many, many scientists that say, hey, we need more carbon dioxide, not less, despite the fact that we're trying to eliminate it with these net zero policies.
And can you exactly break down what that means, net zero? I know it's by 2050, but the idea is that, just more details, if you would, net zero. What is it now?
Right. So net zero means get rid of all carbon dioxide emissions, and what they can't get rid of, they try and capture, and so that the net emissions of carbon dioxide would be zero by 2050. And basically that means an energy transition. That means get rid of coal, oil, natural gas, replace it with wind, solar, and biofuels, and try and get rid of all these emissions. But today we still have about 80% of the world's energy that is produced by coal, oil, and natural gas. That's the same as it was about 25 years ago in 1999. And despite the fact that the world has spent $5 trillion promoting wind and solar over that period, it's just not having any effect. So, you know, one thing, if I was a betting man, I'm happy to take a bet for anybody out there that we're going to continue to increase carbon dioxide emissions. We're going to continue to use coal, oil, and natural gas for many decades to come. They can't be replaced. And we have many, many nations that need to improve the standard of living of their people. And that's done by low-cost, abundant hydrocarbon fuels.
All right. And your website is stevegoreham.com. Goreham is spelled like G-O-R-E-H-A-M. Thanks so much for being with us. Thank you. And if you had to recommend one of your books, what would be the title? Just one.
Well, there's a couple of good ones. I'll recommend The Mad World of Climatism, then, particularly if you have kids. They're getting crazy stuff in the schools, and it'll give them a different point of view.
Excellent. Okay, Steve, all the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry.